is in. It's Aubameyang!
He is so often the man for Arsenal, who comes up with the goods when they need them.
Hey, welcome to Cannon Fodder and All Things Arsenal Podcast. I'm Tim.
I'm Fred.
Oi, oi, oi!
Finally won a game.
We won a game.
And hey, scored a goal.
And we scored a goal. We won a game. 3 points on the board. Season starts now.
In what was an epic, you know, bottom of the table relegation scrap fight, Arsenal has come out on top to move out of the relegation zone into 16th place. And, you know, wow. We really did it.
We did it. We did. Hey, you know what? Honestly, yeah. I think a point that I think Tim Stillman made was that it's really hard to kind of just like separate this game from the context, because if you kind of look at the underlying metrics and just like the scoreline and the performance generally, it's like Arsenal had a relatively comfortable 1-0 win in which we really should have and could have added a few more goals in the second half against like a lower table opposition. Like they had, you know, less than a goal XG. We had a little bit over three goals XG and we won 1-0. So it's like, we would have been hard done by basically to drop any points. It was a solid overall performance, even if the first half, you know, Norwich definitely grew in the game. But we'll get on to all that. But it's just a weird kind of game to draw conclusions from or to know how to feel afterwards, basically just because of how bad the previous three games have been. But yeah, no, dude, it was a good win at the end of the day. Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, and like you're saying, it is a hard one to separate with the context of what's going on with the club right now and, you know, with the way we started the season. You know, I think things will average out in this season. I think the terrible start that we had will start to average out with the quality I think is actually in our team.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it is a weird game, but, you know, hopping right into it, you know, we did have some early chances, I feel like, in the first half.
Yeah.
You know, I think the only chance that they really had, I feel like that was really threatening, was that header that they had kind of early in the first half that just, you know, went wide of the post.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't seem like we were really being troubled. I mean, you were able to watch the game. I don't know exactly how you felt we set up, you know, with our lineup. I thought it was good. It felt proactive. It felt like the players that were coming in, you know, it didn't feel like we chopped and changed everything so much that it was going to be like crazy. It felt like, okay, we brought in stability. We brought in, you know, the right people in the right place. So how did you think the first, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes that game went?
Yeah, no, I mean, we definitely started the game brightly and it was controlled and measured, and we were able to push them back pretty convincingly and pretty easily. And had a lot of good buildup. But, you know, like you said, Norwich defended well, but we also didn't really create a whole lot of like clear cut chances in that first bit. And that's been kind of indicative of Mikel Arteta's time at Arsenal. Not all of it, but when he has struggled, the team has struggled. It's been this exact thing, the first 20 minutes of the game where we look good in possession and we can really progress the ball well, in this case through Lokonga and Odegaard and Pepe being pretty influential, or very influential actually, in this game. He had the most touches of any Arsenal player at the end of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I saw that. It was pretty, like 80-something touches.
Yeah, which is really interesting. And it's actually, you know, if you think about it, pretty encouraging improvement.
I think the stat was he had more touches than anybody on the pitch.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about that compared to like our normal, like most touches kind of guy is either Granit Xhaka or one of the center backs. And that's kind of just tells you where we spend most of our time playing, you know. But if you look at this game and the way we were able to progress the ball pretty well, that first bit of the first half and really mainly in the second half, but we'll get onto that one. I thought it was encouraging that we first of all, started with a lot of Mikel Arteta's players. And just to clarify, like he had some quotes coming out during the week that were like, I think pretty exciting, because he said, it's time to perform. You know, the club has given me the tools that I need. I have the tools that I need, whether that's players back from injury or not suspension, but COVID absence, or whether that's getting Tomiyasu in at the last minute. He's got the ingredients and he's like, now we can start to play our football. Very encouraging lineup. It was massive that Tomiyasu started, having just gotten back or just gotten to London Colony earlier in the week. It was massive that, you know, Ramsdale started over Leno. You know, that's definitely like, that's probably a transition we expected to happen at some point this season, but I didn't really expect it to happen this soon. And
yeah, it was surprising.
It really is Arteta leaning into like, all right, the club has backed me. The club executives, Edu, has come out and said, this is a youth project. This is a development project. Look at the players that we bought. Look at their age profiles. Look at the age profile of the squad in general. It's been this massive restructuring, massive wage restructuring, all this stuff. And Arteta, with this lineup, really lent into that. He started his players and even, you know, kind of got some fringe players back in the mix. You think Ainsley Maitland-Niles starting in midfield, that's what he's been crying out for. And Arteta's like, all right, well, we want you part of this project. So here you go. Here's your shot. And we can maybe get in more into that performance in the second half. If you want to, but yeah, so overall, really first 20 minutes were really encouraging. Lineup was really encouraging, but the second half of the first half, we really saw Norwich kind of just get a foothold in the game for sure. And really start to put their foot on the ball. And I think it's right to point out that Norwich are actually a really good team going forward. They've struggled with letting in goals and letting opposition create a lot of chances against them. But
that was what was kind of surprising to me about this game, is it felt like they really kind of, you know, they knuckled down. And
yeah,
because, you know, it's interesting, you know, going into this game, you know, so much of the rhetoric around Arsenal was, oh, they haven't scored a goal. They haven't won a game. This is terrible. It's terrible. And it is, you know, but it's like the same was true of Wolves and Norwich. You know, it's like teams that, I don't want to say they flatter to deceive, but to a certain extent, you know, it's like, I feel like we were getting a lot of extra pressure, which is going to come from having a big club, but Norwich are in a similar position. They haven't been defending well. They've been able to get forward and look dangerous, but I was really surprised with the defending.
Yeah, and that whole, the whole media bias thing, it's, it has been a tough time to be an Arsenal fan, and it never really seems to be all that consistent. I know we've got our Arsenal tinted glasses on, so, you know, caveats and all that. But at the end of the day, you're right to say that other clubs were in similar positions, and even clubs in better positions in terms of points on the board, say Tottenham. Tottenham have been played off the park all opening four games, you know, of this season, and gotten three really fortunate wins. One of which was against Wolves, one against City. I can't remember the other one, but then they got their butts handed to them by Crystal Palace and Patrick Vieira. That was really fun to see. But they're a team that, like, if you look, and they didn't manage, I think they managed one shot in the 90 minutes, like literally, and it was like 0.09 XG, not even 0.1 XG. Like, they did nothing against Crystal Palace. And that, I know they were down a man, but that red card didn't come till like the 65th minute or something like that. So yeah, no, Arsenal do get an unfair time from the media and that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think the manager's been backed. He's been calling for consistency. He's been saying, all right, it's time to perform now. There's this kind of like Arsenal against the world type of feeling for fans right now. I think it's definitely the case for me. We've got this young project. We've got this young manager. We got this promising squad and this good idea maybe where we could go, but we haven't really seen the result of that yet. But yeah, I do think it's exciting. But back to the game though, it's like, a lot of people were definitely very nervy, as good as the home crowd sounded. You know, I think that's something to definitely point out. The home crowd was making noise throughout the whole game. It was a very nervy first half, I think, overall. We saw our team control large parts of that first half, the first half of the first half in particular, without creating a whole lot of chances. And that was kind of felt a little bit too familiar. And then we kind of ceded a lot of control and possession and sat off a bit. And that felt all too familiar. So going into the second half, it was really like, all right, well, I hope something happens. I don't know if that's a change. I don't know if that's,
how did you think our new right back signing was playing, Tomiyasu? How did you feel like he was? It seemed like right from the get go, you know, especially from the little highlights that I watched, it seemed like he really, you know, added a lot to how we were playing on that right side.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to make in general, to say that you look at our back four and it's got a really good balance to it. And I think Tomiyasu was that missing link to an extent. You know, he's kind of the player we hope Chambers would kind of turn into, that kind of center back, right back hybrid. But Chambers is, as we know and have seen in the 6-7 years he's been here, but also in the start of this season, is a bit soft defensively. It's the exact opposite with Tomiyasu. He showed in that first half, and the little bit he played in the second half before pulling up with some cramp, I think. But he showed that he is a defender's defender, if that makes sense. Like, he defends first. He's not a Ben White who progresses the ball first and is good on the ball first and then defends second, you know, and then you couple that with Gabriel, who can do a bit offensively, but is also a bit of a dog defensively. And then Tierney, who wins his duels, if nothing else. But, you know, obviously our tactics have him up the pitch most of the time. But yeah, Tomiyasu was great. He won seven or six of seven aerial duels. So we knew that coming in, that he'd be really good in the air. I think that's a welcome change to the back line in general.
For sure.
From set pieces, from open play, all that stuff. He closed his man down. I think that, like, really just a defender's instinct. You could see it. He was always touch tight to his man. Whatever left winger or forward was getting into his half space or down the byline, he was like on them like glue. He didn't let crosses in. You know what I mean? And I was just like, wow, that just, like, it feels good. It makes you feel a little bit safer. He's kind of a right back equivalent to a Monreal, who's like never going to do anything super duper spectacular offensively, but always going to give you that 6-7 out of 10 strong, solid defensive performance. So yeah, very encouraging signs from the new guy.
Yeah, and it seemed too that, like, you know, from listening and watching the highlights and stuff, one of the things that I thought was really interesting about that right side is that you have Gabriel and Ben White. You know, Gabriel is kind of like a proactive defender. He likes to step up.
He's a modern center back. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he likes to step up and get involved. And what I really liked about Ben White is it just seems like when he got the ball, he's looking around, and if there's not, you know, something going on, he wants to carry the ball forward. He wants to pass the ball forward.
Yeah.
You know, I think the stat was, like, I think he only passed the ball to Tomiyasu like 3 or 4 times in the whole game.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You know, which is crazy, because it's like, you think about that, like, the, just how the U-shaped horseshoe of shitey McShite that would happen so much in every Arsenal game literally for, like,
since the end of Wenger.
Years and years. Yeah. You know, even during Wenger.
That's what I'm saying. Since the end of Wenger, like since, like, the last couple seasons, I should have said. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. No, we started to see that horseshoe of death.
It was so bad, you know? And it's like, you look at the way we started these first three games of the season, and you look at Pablo Mari, and you look at Holding, and, you know, it's like either one of them, if something's not on, or as soon as they get the ball, they think it's like, oh, we're playing quick, we're moving it. They just pump it out to the left back, pump it out to the right back. The right back just dings it back.
Yeah.
And it's just over and over and over. And it's so insane. You know, it doesn't help. All it does is help the opposition get set and move in and press and get you stuck.
It helps their press because they know where the ball's going. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so it was it's just great to see White move up into that and, you know, putting some really good passes in, you know, carrying the ball forward.
Yeah.
Really, really great passes forward.
Yeah. It's nice to point out, I think, or important to point out, that he played 3 key passes in this game, which is something classified as, like, it led to a chance being created. I think that's how that stat works.
Yeah.
And he's a player that's been brought in to kind of emulate David Luiz and kind of be that replacement. David Luiz only played 2 in all of last season, 2 key passes. And Ben White's already played 3 in one game. Yeah. So, like, that just kind of shows you what you're saying is that he's just a progressive player, and he's offensively, hopefully, even as a center back, going to add a whole lot to our progression. You think when he's got Thomas Partey buzzing around, you know, I think it's no coincidence that Pepe had so much involvement when you've got someone like Ben White there, who's not just dumping it to Tomiyasu to get it to Pepe, but he's finding Pepe consistently. I think that was a pretty high pass combination. So really encouraging stuff.
No, it's super encouraging, but I just feel like you look at the balance that team has, and you look at Tomiyasu and you look at what he's good at, and it almost makes exact sense. Like, oh, this is exactly why we signed him, and he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do because he's pulling inside when Ben White's going up.
Exactly.
You know, he's making sure that the space that he's taking up is, what was incredible to me was just the fact that, like, he was okay to start the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Like, barely trained with us.
He only trained once or twice.
Yeah, he played once or twice. He, like, essentially got done with internationals, you know, had like a day off, you know, flew into London and trained and then played.
That was his first day at the club when he got back from international duty. He didn't go. The transfer got completed and he didn't even show. And then he went straight to Japan after the transfer got completed.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, obviously only lasted an hour, but I was really impressed with, you know, his debut. Obviously, he almost had that that volley. Dude, that would have been so dirty.
That's what I was going to say is he does remind me of Monreal so much because Monreal, while we just described him, or I just described him as that slightly more conservative, but just really solid defensively, utility, you know, like part fullback, part center back type player. Monreal could get forward and he scored some important goals for Arsenal. You know, I can think of one off the top of my head or two. He scored against Man United away in the FA Cup a good few years back. He scored in the FA Cup semifinal against Man City, going in at the back post. Like he, when he got forward, he was just such a solid player technique wise. I think we're just seeing something really similar with Tomiyasu with both feet. You know, he had a left footed shot, I think in the first half that looked decent, you know, but it was his wrong foot. But yeah, that technique for that volley, if that would have gone in, dude, the place would have gone insane. That would have been so cool.
Insane.
Yeah. But moving into the second half, I think this is like kind of the important bit. And specifically, you know, after Arteta made the changes, you know, cause I think it's really important to note that like we came out in the second half, looked a bit better, but still weren't quite creating the type of domination that leads to chance creation that we wanted to see. So I really liked that Arteta changed it up pretty early. I can't remember exactly what minute, but it was in the 60-somethingth minute. And we've seen him kind of hold on to his subs and play his cards a bit close to the chest in that aspect. So I thought that was really encouraging to see, you know, Arteta going ahead and changing things up. And not just changing it up, but changing it up in a very attacking way. I don't know if you could kind of gather this from listening, but you know, we changed to a 4-3-3, and Maitland-Niles went back to right back as Tomiyasu came off a bit tired and Sambi came off. On came Partey, the real, you know, midfield giant, so to speak. Odegaard dropped in to kind of play with him a bit and ESR roamed, but it was really encouraging to see Arteta make those changes early and those changes be so effective.
Yeah, it was good. And honestly, tactically, it makes 100% sense, but you're kind of like, you got to feel a little bit unlucky for Sambi because he was having a really great game.
Yeah, but do you remember this coming back from international duty? He didn't play the second Belgian game. They thought he might have a slight knock, so they kind of rested him. So it really didn't surprise me. He played really well, but it didn't surprise me. They were a bit cautious with him and just kind of got him out of there.
Yeah. And I think, too, one thing for me that I feel like was really important for this game that I think will be really important going forward just for years is the amount of running and work that Emile Smith-Rowe and Odegaard get through.
Yeah, Odegaard in particular in this game had some really, really important defensive interventions on some pretty dangerous Norwich counterattacks.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, I don't want to bring it back to, you know, kind of old stuff in our past, but you look at Mesut Ozil, and, you know, obviously he's running stats and blah, blah, blah. People have all this stuff to say about it, you know. And I loved Ozil. But it's so difficult to find hard, legitimately hard working, hard running, creative players.
Yeah, very true.
You know? And I feel like Saka is that way to a certain extent as well. You know, he likes to stay closer to the final third, which is fine. But you look at Emile Smith-Rowe, you look at Odegaard, you know, even Partey, you know, he's a player that runs, you know?
Yeah.
And I just feel like, you know, even Sambi's the same way.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I just feel like those four players specifically, if they're rotating in midfield, and obviously, you know, you got to have two more in there so people can actually get rest. But, man, I was impressed, you know? But yeah, you know, Partey comes on.
One thing I wanted to highlight, sorry to interrupt you. I think one thing I wanted to highlight about this game is sort of like an overall meta point that I think is really important before we kind of get on to those decisive moments that led to us winning this game was the fact, if you look at this squad in general, look at the fact that there were still a few absentees from that starting lineup, you know, Partey namely, but even someone like Granit Xhaka is most likely going to be, you know, that's going to be the starting midfield. Whether we like it or not, that's most likely what it's going to be once everyone's fit and available for selection. But last season, this midfield would have been Ceballos and Elneny. And you look at Sambi and Maitland-Niles and you just think, oh, that even if like Maitland-Niles struggled maybe a little bit, he's at least trying to play the right way. And I think what you saw the club do this summer was really raise our floor. You know, we saw a high ceiling at times last season, that West Brom game in the snow, beating Leicester. Later on beating Chelsea twice. We saw that we can do it in big games and put, you know, put the smaller teams to the sword so we can play well, but then also we'd have this just massive inconsistency and this really low floor. So it was really encouraging for me to see not only new players come in a lot of positions and make some debuts, but just like the backup players that kind of came in to fill in were of a higher quality than what we've kind of seen recently. But yeah, the second half, yeah, as that went on, those changes, you know, like, what did you feel with Partey coming on? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like he's the best midfielder that we have at the club for sure. So when he comes on in the second half, you know, he plays that pass in Saka.
Oh my gosh, dude.
You know, which, you know, he plays out the Pepe. It's, you know, which Pepe takes a great shot, and Cruel makes like a fingertip save.
It was a fantastic save.
To tip it onto the post. It comes back off the other post. Pepe hits it again, and Cruel's able to get back, get a touch. It hits off the other defender. It comes back to Alba, you know, taps it in. It's a scrappy, scrappy, ugly goal, but it's a goal, and it's beautiful. I think what's, to me, which makes it, you know, it's not like some Burnley-esque, you know, scramble from a set piece with some lump just like heading it around the box and they like trickles in, you know, there was some legitimately good play. That pass that Partey plays to Saka
is insane. It's perfect.
Really,
dude, it's
really
exactly what we're missing. You know, Partey does it so well. That disguised pass, like that disguised vertical pass where his hips are like facing like perpendicular to the goal, like facing the touchline, you know what I mean? And he just whips it straight forward though. Just the last second, it just throws midfielders and defenders for a loop. And then it gets it into, you know, the final third and our dangerous kind of ball carrying players like Saka in this case, and Smith Rowe and Odegaard, like Partey being back and being fit. It was also nice as another sub point to see Arteta maybe learn from his mistakes last season when he played Partey earlier on in the season, when he was injured against Spurs and he got re-injured and out for longer. It was also kind of nice to see him like take it a bit slow with Partey and not start him in this game.
Yeah, you know, just give him the last 20 minutes.
Also put the faith in Ainsley Maitland-Niles, get him back involved in the project and a part of things, because we're going to need him, I'm sure. So yeah, all good things. But yeah, that pass to Saka was just,
it was great.
It was fantastic. Yeah, it was so good.
And honestly, you know, I've seen a lot of people kind of, you know, say a lot of stuff about Maitland. I was like, oh, he didn't have a good game, or he was this, or he was that. I think he was fine.
He was. I think he was fine. I just think he's not as good as Partey, but we don't think he's not expected to be.
Yeah, but we don't need him to be as good as Partey. That's the problem, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like for what he did, how he came in, and, you know, that's the first game he started as a central midfielder under Arteta, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely under Arteta. It's only the second one in the Premier League he's ever started for Arsenal.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, he had a couple decent passes. I know he had the one pass that he popped over the top to Alba and Max Aarons pulled him down and got a yellow card. Yeah. I mean, that was a good ball. And you know, I feel like he did all right for what he was doing.
I really,
and then he came back, played right back.
He tried to play the right way. I think that's what you can see. And I hope that he's just kind of bought more into the project, because you can definitely see a role for him in this squad as a utility player, as a right back fill in. You know, if Tomiyasu's not there, if Tomiyasu's filling in for a center back, you know, he's a center mid fill in, you know, that's where he played all of the second half of last season for West Brom. So like, he's getting more experience in that position, and I think it's great. And I think, you know, players like Elneny, who's going to be out of contract in the summer, can just kind of move along, and Maitland-Niles is kind of tailor made for that role. And you never know what could happen. You know, he's kind of dusting the cobwebs off. Like we said, it's only his second start in midfield for Arsenal in his career. You know, maybe he can only get better from here. And I think an important thing to note about that midfield pairing is they're both kids. They're Maitland-Niles, not in age, but like more in experience in that position. But they're both like young, and they kind of needed that experienced partner next to them. I think if you put Partey in for either one of those midfielders, the other one looks way, way better, obviously. But yeah, no, Partey coming in really changed the game. Smith Rowe coming in really changed the game. You know, he doesn't go backwards with the ball ever, like passing, carrying, nothing.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he'll conserve possession or preserve it sometimes when he needs to, but I just love the fact that he just gets the ball and his head only goes forward and the ball only goes forward. So all those players just making a huge difference. It literally made the difference in this game. We got that scrappy goal, but a well-deserved goal. And really for the rest of that second half, barring one super late, you know, Pukki in about the 6-yard box and an absolutely miraculous Gabriel covering Ben White's ass kind of intervention.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think he's covering Ben White's ass, because I feel like
you think Ben White should have dealt with that at the front post?
No, because Ben White is following Todd Cantwell, his run.
The front post,
so
run?
It's, yeah. Yeah, he's following Todd Cantwell. That's literally like what Gabriel is supposed to do. That's his space because with the way the play is moving, he has to follow that. So I don't think he's saving Ben White's ass. I think if Ben White goes on to Pookie, then Tierney's already out with the ball and Todd Cantwell's in. So it's like, I think they did the right thing. Right. You know, that's exactly what your center back pairing is supposed to be doing.
That's a good point. Yeah. That's that balance we're seeing, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's like, because I think that's what would have happened if Mari and Holding were going. Holding would have dropped in off the ball to Pookie and Todd Cantwell would have run in. Then he would have turned.
Yeah.
And Todd Cantwell probably would have just either shot or played it to Pookie, who would have been open because no one was looking at him and would have scored. Like your center backs, like, you know, it's like they're all pushed over on that.
Yeah,
on that
right side
because that's where the play is. You know, Gabriel's watching what's going on. White has to move forward with the runner. So yeah, I mean, I don't think he's saving his ass, but I think, you know, it's a great tackle.
It's a great intervention. So, yeah, nonetheless, and you saw what it meant to Ramsdale, and you saw what it meant to White himself. They both gave big fist pumps, went and gave him a high five.
Dude, and that's one thing in the highlights and all the stuff I watched. You know, after the fact. Ramsdale really looks like
I like him a
way more kind of vocal, effusive, you know,
commanding.
He just looked like he was, you know, every block, every, you know, everything, you know, he's getting in his defenders, you know, face, giving them bumps, you know, like yelling, come on, look, you know, like,
yeah,
I like that. He's getting everybody energized. I feel like that's really cool.
Like we'll still find out if he's a better keeper overall than Leno. I think so far in this game, we saw Ramsdale's distribution was a whole lot better. He kind of, instead of going long all of the time, he punches the ball through the lines. He's not afraid to do that, you know? So I think you saw way better distribution from him, but like you're saying, it's that commanding presence. It's that organizer in that back line. It's that really just big personality that a lot of goalkeepers have, a lot of successful goalkeepers have. So I loved it, you know, and Arteta's talked about his presence and the energy that he brings and training and stuff like that. And you know, that's the goalkeeper Arteta pushed for. And it's really nice to see him get his chance and to play well and start his career off with a couple clean sheets at the club. So another positive note from this. I mean, after that, the goal we scored, you know, like we said, Norwich had a chance or two kind of isolated. The game did get a bit open, but really Arsenal, I think I said it at the time, I was like, man, we're really playing with our food. Like we really should have put a couple more goals in. Like, I think if this game is 3-0, it's not a surprise to anybody or it's not like undeserved, but through a few pretty good Tim Krul interventions and just, you know, situations where you want to see our players be a little bit more clinical. I'm thinking of that Smith Rowe chance. I don't know if you've seen the highlights, that Smith Rowe chance. I just want him to do a bit better. He did everything else right. You know, I think the team overall pressed well, you know, towards the end of the game and created some good moments like that. But yeah, just it's exactly what the doctor ordered. Like we had to win this game and there was massive pressure on it. And while the scoreline doesn't reflect it, we were pretty dominant overall and they really didn't have many good opportunities. As good as Ramsdale did at times, mainly with his distribution, he really didn't have a whole lot to do in terms of shot stopping. And that's credit to the defensive organization and his credit to some last minute interventions by Gabriel. Cedric had one late on. But yeah, so I mean, it's the exact result we needed. And while you can't remove the context from it completely, like, how did you feel like after the game? Like just relief or like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird one because I didn't really get to watch it. But yeah, obviously we won the game. You know, there was a certain amount of relief because it was like, okay, it felt like, all right, we got this game in the bag. It seemed like we were a lot more dangerous. You know, we ended the game with 30 shots. And I think on a different you know, Tim Krul maybe doesn't make as many, you know, really great saves as he did. Cause I don't actually think he's that great of a goalkeeper. So,
yeah,
you know,
he's entertaining. I love playing against him, especially when we win because he time wastes from like the first minute. And then it's really funny to see him, his teams, cause he played for Newcastle in the past, really fun to see them go down and then, oh shit, now he's like running around hurting everywhere. So it's like, wait, where was
did you watch any of the, I mean, I don't know if you ever do. Do you ever watch any of the post-match stuff?
Not really. Occasionally when I watch the game on like cable TV and that stuff's aired afterwards.
I always just usually. watch them on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
But Daniel Farke after the
Faulkner,
you know, in his post match,
something like that. Yeah.
No, Daniel Farke.
Daniel Farke.
It's like F-A-R-K-E or something like that.
No, whatever.
He's complaining that there wasn't enough stoppage time in the second half.
Oh yeah, yeah. They mentioned that on the Arscast. Yeah. I didn't hear that, but it's just like, okay, yeah, dude, your goalkeeper wasted so much time.
I know that. I watched that and I was like, what?
Yeah. That was wild. But yeah, so
because like even on the radio, like the Arsenal radio commentary. Stream. The commentary, they were saying like literally from like, you know, 10 minutes in, they're like, you know, like Tim Krul's, you know, he's taking his time, like sweet time on these, you know, free kicks or these goal kicks and stuff. And you're just like, oh my God,
dude, he does it so early in the games. It's just ridiculous. Like I understand the smaller team kind of a little bit of gamesmanship here and there, but you don't do it in the first 10 minutes. Go try to play, go win the game. You know what I mean? So he's annoying, but I think we should go ahead and transition to the second half of the show. It's usually three questions or our hot takes or whatever. This time, a little bit less to talk about. We got through a lot in this first half, so we just got a couple little meta points to hit on. So let's go into it. Arteta's been backed this window. This project is really starting to take shape. Whether or not it's going to be successful, time will tell. But how do you feel after this game? It's the result we needed. It's a pretty decent performance, although there's definitely things that could be improved on, namely our control of the game, our clinicality, all that kind of stuff. I think a lot of it improves when Partey gets back in the midfield. But how are you feeling basically after this game? That's what I want to get into. It's exciting to see these new players come in. It's exciting to get a result, get back on the board. And you look ahead to some of these fixtures we've got coming up next week. It's Burnley. Then it's a tough one. It's North London Derby after some midweek League Cup action. But the two games after that look pretty decently winnable. I think it's Brighton and Aston Villa. That might be a tougher one. But yeah, how are you feeling overall?
I mean, I feel okay. You know, I feel like, you know, I don't want to say that I feel a certain amount of apathy, but I feel like, with the way we started the season, it just opens up it opens you up and it hurts. And then the next thing you know, you're winning a game. And for some reason for me, it didn't feel as
well. Dude,
I just didn't feel as great about it as I feel.
Okay,
like a lot of
people. Let me interrupt you for a quick second. Cause I want to just highlight your point there, because like I said, I was listening to the Arsenal Vision podcast on the way home from work today, stuck in awful Seattle traffic, but Elliot made a point that kind of goes along with exactly what you're saying. It's sort of his headline from this game, and it's that he misses being relevant as a club, if that makes sense. Like, yes, we got this win. Yes, it's really good. Yes, hopefully this kind of kickstarts our season, but also he misses the game, the Champions League nights, or the games when it's potentially top four deciding or title deciding, when we're checking the opposition scores from the teams around us, from Chelsea, from Man U, hoping they drop points. And it's like, man, we've really lost a lot of status in the past few seasons. We've really lost a lot of ground. And these games don't seem to have the same type of just like meaning behind them. And I think that kind of goes along with exactly what you're saying. And obviously we're going to have rivalry games this season that mean a lot, but like games like this, it's like, where's the jeopardy? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, even for me, like with the Crystal Palace Spurs game, you know, I didn't really get a lot of joy out of them losing 3-0 to Crystal Palace. It is what it is, but for me, I was just like, you know, we very well could be losing 3 or 4-0 to them. Well, in the North London Derby, you know, like,
we'll see.
I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
you know,
I know what you
like
mean. We're not,
where
we got to earn
it. Is at in transition and development.
Yep.
You know, the way I just could not separate the context of where we're at with the result of this game. Cause I'm like, we beat, you know, we're in last place and we beat the team ahead of us by one goal. We probably should have scored more, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it just, to me, it just felt like, okay, great. You did your job. Now, like, we got to go play Burnley, who are definitely going to be a tougher team to beat than Norwich.
Tougher to score against. Yeah, we'll have to be a lot more clinical.
It's going to be a tougher game. So for me, I'm like, I just felt really reserved about it. I'm like, okay, I'm glad we won. But guess what? We need to go beat Burnley.
It's not going to get any easier.
100%.
It's very possible that Norwich go down this season, and that's like one of our easiest fixtures, you know, optics wise all season, is at home to Norwich.
Yeah, and but I just think about it like, what if we go and we lose to Burnley, okay?
Yeah.
And what if we go and we lose to Spurs? And Brighton are actually playing pretty well this season.
They have
fifth,
been.
Fourth or fifth right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing really well. So, and they have a pretty solid team. So you just think like, if we can't beat Brentford, which I know there's extenuating circumstances, but you can't make excuses for everything, but we can't beat Brentford. If we don't go beat Burnley and we don't beat Spurs, like what makes you think we're going to beat Brighton? So I just feel like I don't want to be negative about it, but I just feel like
it's a slippery slope.
If we get some results on the board and then we're actually playing, you know, and we have the team that Arteta says, like, okay, we got to go out there and win. That's great. Like, I want to see us actually do it.
Yeah.
And until we get through like the next 10 games, you know, next 12 games. And we're like getting closer to, you know, the festive stuff, you know,
November, December. Yeah.
Then for me, I'll look at it and say, okay, great. You know?
Yeah.
Let's see where we're at. I just feel like the expectations are high. I think they ought to be high. I think what should be demanded of from Arteta and this team should be high. You know, the bar should be set high, and I just don't feel like the Norwich game gets up to the level where the bar should be because we shouldn't be at the fucking bottom of the table.
Yeah.
You know,
no, they I completely agree. Yeah.
You know, it's a weird one for me.
I agree. But I think in just this kind of speaks to just where I'm at right now as a fan. You mentioned the word apathy, and I think that's definitely something I felt recently. But I think ultimately, maybe over the course of this past week, as I didn't really engage with any Arsenal content except for like the occasional thing on Twitter, I didn't listen to any podcasts. I didn't really do anything. I just kind of like thought to myself about what's going on and how it feels and how important this Norwich game was. And I think I've just kind of come to a point of acceptance, not necessarily apathy, of where we're at. And that's, we have lost our prestige. Like we did get bullied in all three of those opening fixtures and it was embarrassing and people talk shit about us and they were right to do so. You know what I mean? Obviously in some cases it got taken a little bit too far. We're talking to you, Gary Neville, and his whole bit about how he couldn't see what the object was this past transfer window, what the strategy was. There was an obvious strategy. He's just being a dick. Anyways, that kind of stuff aside, we did deserve some stick for the way we started the season and the way Arsenal has been in the past almost decade, maybe a little bit less than that, you know? But what I'm starting to think about this team, this squad, this project that we've got going on is that it's just that. It's a project. And I think what encouraged me about this game more than the result was a lot of the partnerships that we got to see for the first time and a way of playing. And that fact I mentioned earlier of our floor being raised a little bit more, you know, we talked about the ceiling. We're not really quite sure what that is yet, but we've got glimpses that it could be good. We've got projections that certain players could be really good. But like you said, we just need to see it at this point. You know, it's all good beating Norwich. You should beat Norwich. You got to go beat Burnley away because you should beat Burnley. Because you have better players than them. So I completely agree with you that we need to see it. But also I look at this Norwich game and I'm like, that back four makes a whole lot of sense. And that's fun to see. That's nice to see the club have a sort of objective, a sort of like goal in mind of what they want their defense to look like. And the average age is 22 and they already look like that. So that's going to be our defense for a while, most likely. And that's fantastic. You know, you look in the midfield and Maitland-Niles being a part of the project is a plus. Sambi looking good again is a plus. You look in front of that, Odegaard working his ass off. That's great. Aubameyang getting the goal. That's great. Pepe having great involvement. Saka not having the best of first halves, not having the best of games, but really grew in his presence and personality and influence on the game when Thomas Partey came on the pitch and started to find him a little bit more often. So, and that's another positive point is Partey coming on and really looking good and really kind of changing the way that we played because, you know, we talked earlier in this podcast about certain players, kind of impressive stats, you know, Ben White's key passes, Pepe's touches and his chances created, all that stuff. That was predominantly, and most of our XG as well, was predominantly in that period after Thomas Partey came on the pitch. I really don't think it can be emphasized enough how important he could be to our season if he can stay fit. that's a huge point I did want to make earlier. But all in all, it's like I'm getting enjoyment from watching Arsenal right now out of like starting to get behind the project and starting to see some partnerships form and a plan form, because we really haven't had too much of a plan. And honestly, legitimately, my entire like Arsenal fandom, I kind of got in to Arsenal at the tail end of the OG Project Youth with Gibbs and Ramsey and Jenkinson and Wilshire and all those like English core kind of guys, UK core kind of guys. I kind of got into it then. But then after that, we've been firefighting. You know, we've had decent seasons. We've had some cup wins, but we've been embarrassed in the Champions League a bunch, and we've gotten beat by Swansea away and like all these just like kind of typical Arsenal tropes. But for the first time in what I can really remember, you know, we seem to have a plan, and that's what I'm hoping to, that's what I'm choosing to cling on to. And that's what I'm hoping kind of pays dividends in these very winnable fixtures we got coming up. So yeah, we got Burnley on Saturday. Same time, early kickoff for me. I think it's 7 a.m. But it's a must-win game. It's another one. You know, we've got this stretch of about 4 or 5 games that are decent on paper. So we got to make the most of them. Because one thing's for sure is just like what you said about like, oh, how bad could it get again if, you know, we don't beat Burnley and we lose to Spurs, because that's possible. It could also be really great if we beat Burnley, beat Spurs. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like those things
can
are
go either.
Equally,
I just feel like,
yeah, it's 50-50. Yeah, it we just need to be, way. Yeah.
I think the only thing is I don't think it's 50-50. Because I just feel like
we've been burned.
I hated how last season went, how it ended. I hated it. Because we had all the opportunities in the world to get more results in the first half of the season, right? Had every opportunity in the world. We had, you know, obviously the team's different, but you know, we could have done more than we did last season.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely could have done more than we did last season. So it's frustrating to start the season the way we did, even with all the extenuating circumstances, than to still be in a position where, you know, I just don't think that the Premier League is easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's a lot of Arsenal fans who just think like, oh, like, yeah, we should be beaten. Like Burnley and Norwich and Brighton and Watford and Crystal Palace and Everton. They'll name all these teams like, oh, we should be beating them 2-3-4-5-0. Like, we should be crushing these teams. I'm like, all these teams are better than they used to be.
Yeah, that's something we have mentioned on previous pods this season, is that like everybody, and I mean, we just saw Crystal Palace. I mentioned them earlier in the season as like relegation candidates, but we just saw them beat Spurs 3-0. Hudson Edouard coming on and getting a brace. Like, they could be good this season too. You never know. Yeah. Like, the whole league has gotten better without
You know, you look at like in the last five, six years with all the new TV money, all of these clubs have more money than they've ever had. All of them do. You know, obviously, you know, you have the big dogs, you know, which like in terms of the financial, you know, stuff, you know, Arsenal is still closer to some of them than, you know, Burnley is. But all of these clubs have more money than they've ever had. And they've invested that money in the players, in the staff and
training grounds.
It's a difficult league, man.
It's so hard.
So, it's just like I look at these games and, you know, some people are like, oh, well, this is a winnable game. This is a winnable game. We should be beating this guy. And like, I think we should. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but like our recent record against Burnley isn't great.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, especially away.
Record against Brighton has not been terrific, you know? And so it's just a hard one. So I'm just like, man, it's like I don't want to endorse the game in the win against Norwich as like, all right, here's where we start. Here's the comeback. Momentum's building. You know, I'm just like,
you need to see it some more.
You know, I got to see more.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
I was excited, but I got to see more.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to leave it, man. We got to see more. There's plenty to be positive about. I think one thing to mention, especially going into a game against a very physical Burnley team, is that the players looked a little bit more up for the fight and the duels. And I think a lot of that's personnel related. You know, Partey wins his duels. Gabriel, for one, wins his duels. Tomiyasu definitely wins his duels, especially in the air. I think all those things are going to play a massive part in, another really, really important game. It already feels like every game this season is a cup final, you know, until we get some real traction. But yeah, plenty to be positive about the direction and about the project, but also like we've left it, like we're leaving it plenty still to come. We need to see some more. We need to see Arsenal back this win up with another one this next weekend. So let's leave it there, man. We'll talk to you guys again after that Burnley game. Later.
Bye.